Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN, 1580 AM, and in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK, 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. And history is being made a lot of places, and nowhere more so than in the controversy over the Alito draft decision. Came out of the Supreme Court, leaked, I'm sure, by a clerk. Leaked by a clerk. Some people say it was leaked by a right-wing clerk who wanted to nail them down. My own belief, it was probably leaked by a clerk who was appalled by the decision and wanted to get it out there so people could do something about it. But regardless, they'll find out. And my own view is whoever leaked it did a public service. I was a law clerk on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in Chicago. I was the law clerk for the chief judge, Thomas Fairchild, a long time ago. One of the probably greatest judges in Wisconsin history. He was appointed to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals are just under the U.S. Supreme Court. They are the last resort before the U.S. Supreme Court. Most of their decisions don't get reviewed. And so my job, I'd meet with the judge after we heard oral argument. The clerks would sit on the side. The judges would sit up on the in an elevated dais, ask questions. And then afterwards, we'd meet in his office and he'd say, well, here's how I want this to come out. There were two clerks, me and another guy. And we took turns on cases. In other words, he'd take one case, I'd take another, and he'd say, well, okay, on this particular case, I want it to come out this way. So write a draft, and then he would edit it and do whatever he wanted, and it would be issued. Now, it was unthinkable to me back then to leak a draft, because once these drafts get drafted, then they get circulated to the whole court that listened to the case. In the case of the Seventh Circuit and other courts of appeals, it's a three-judge panel. Three judges sit up there. In those days, they each had two clerks, so that six clerks would probably see these things. The U.S. Supreme Court has nine justices, and they have four clerks each. So that's 36 clerks and nine justices. And to my knowledge, there's never been a leak of an actual draft before in the Supreme Court. There's been talk, there's been chatter. People read tea leaves about the questions the justice has asked, and then they try to predict what's going to happen. But, you know, that's a risky business. You really can't totally predict how it's going to turn out. And this time, the whole draft decision was leaked. And those draft decisions really don't get changed much normally. They really don't. They really don't. I personally think that the U.S. Supreme Court didn't think this out. It's 5-4. That means that Roberts is with the three liberals. But the fifth one was Amy Comey Barrett, and she got rammed through in a lame duck session by Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch. And she was voted on by senators in November who weren't going to be serving in the Senate after January. They either got beaten, some of them, or they retired. So you're going to change 50 years of constitutional law on a whim because Moscow Mitch succeeded in not giving Merrick Garland a hearing and then ramming through Comey Barrett in a lame duck session. And so what? That is legitimacy? No, that's not legitimacy. That's not legitimacy. Look, they have a filibuster in the Senate, which I disagree with. But in most cases, that especially that don't have to do with the budget, take 60 votes to pass anything. If you're going to overturn established precedent, it should at least take six Supreme Court justices, 2/3. And when you do it with five, and you do it with somebody rammed through in the lame duck, you are opening up anarchy in this country, because the Supreme Court has squandered its legitimacy. That's all it has. It has no army. It has no enforcement power personally. The justices don't go out and arrest people. They order the bailiff, or they order law enforcement to do it. But when they do this, I don't think that they took into account all the ramifications. For instance, one of many, there is a guy named Peter Brinelow. I don't know if you ever heard of Peter Brinelow. Peter Brinelow was an editor of National Review. That's the magazine conservative formed by Bill Buckley. Now, that's a mainstream publication. It's very conservative, but it's basically principled conservative, and they stood up to Trump on a lot of things. Well, Brinelow is really bad news. He's an odd duck. And finally, he left National Review, and he's with this white supremacist organization now. And he came out yesterday, and you know what he said? He said that now the Supreme Court should overturn Brown versus Board of Education. In other words, the decision in 1954 that said separate but equal is no longer any good. You can't have black schools and white schools. A number of plaintiffs came together to bring that case, because if you were a black kid, they sent you to a school, and in a lot of states, you didn't have a lot of textbooks. You had shoddy, you had very, very shoddy supplies. You had shoddy materials. You had shoddy classrooms to teach in. Black teams couldn't play against white teams. This is 1954, guys. 1954. And they impliedly overruled Plessy v. Ferguson, a Supreme Court case in the 1890s. Well, Louisiana had a law that said that black people had to, on a train, had to sit in the last car. So some guy decided, the heck with that. This is very sad, because I think what he was, I think he was partially of white descent and black descent. So he sat in another car and they arrested him. They put him in jail, went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court in the 1890s, said as long as he could ride anywhere on the train, that was okay. Took till 1954 to overturn that. And now this clown, Peter Brinelow, using the reasoning of overturning Roe v. Wade, is saying, well, go ahead and overturn Brown versus Board of Education. The other thing that they could do, and you're not going to believe this, but I'll tell you, as late as 1961, if you went into a drugstore pharmacy in Connecticut and asked for birth control, pills or condoms, you had to prove to the pharmacist you were married. And if you weren't married, you couldn't get them. Well, first of all, that results in more abortions. So, I mean, for the love of Pete. And secondly, that's not the state's business. That's nobody's business. That's your business. That's your business. And we're not going to go back to segregated anything. And I can believe this. It wasn't too long ago, I think 10 years ago, Texas had a law, you won't believe this, regulating what kind of sexual activity and positions people could have. You know, now, they obviously aren't invading people's bedrooms, but this is none of their business. These are consenting adults. I'm talking about consenting adults. I'm not talking about anything else. If two consenting adults are together, it's not the state's business what kind of sexual activity they engage in, frankly. Frankly. And then, of course, you had the case of same-sex marriage, where the Supreme Court said that there's a right to privacy and so forth. You have no idea how many cases out there could be overturned based on two things, the holding in this draft on Roe v. Wade, and secondly, on the advocacy that's coming out from the extreme right wing. And the question is, how long will people, even Republicans, put up with invasions of their privacy? There's a very famous law review article written in the 19th century, late 19th century, that talked about the right to privacy. And I think it was Justice Brandeis, who at the time was not yet a judge, was one of the authors. And really a very profound article, because what it said is, you know, there is a penumbra in the Constitution of privacy. The difference between us and an authoritarian state, fascism, communism, Nazism, Russian mafia, is you have a right to be let alone. You have a right to the state not sticking his nose in your business. If you're an adult, consenting adult, that's your business. And this business of trying to get in your personal business is something that, unique in Western civilization, we don't permit. You know, the other thing is, there are a lot of countries that outlaw abortion. And what the data shows is there are not fewer abortions proportionately, but there are fewer abortions that result in deaths of women and butchering of women. In other words, if a woman feels driven to this, and I can't possibly, as a man, imagine any of this, but if she is, the question is it self-inflicted, or does her roommate in college, or does a friend do it who doesn't know what they're doing? You know? And the woman is gets an infection, badly damaged. This this thing by this court invades the whole notion of privacy in a very profound way, and people haven't faced up to that yet. And you're going to see even more extreme MAGA types come out and go, we've got to get our nose in your business. We've got to get our nose in your business. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. The director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. To finish up what we were talking about in the last segment, I think that Alito and these Supreme Court justices are feeling the heat. Alito just announced that he will not be making an appearance at a judicial conference that he was supposed to speak at. Judges go to the, especially Supreme Court justices, go to these judicial conferences. Every state has them. Every federal circuit has them. Remember when I was a law clerk, they had one in French Lick, Indiana. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is all the federal courts in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. It's divvied up by geography. And they rotate these judicial conferences among those three states in the Seventh Circuit, for instance. And Supreme Court justices come in to speak. It's a big deal. I remember in French Lick, Indiana, I was down there. Some of the other law clerks were playing tennis. A couple of the Supreme Court justices wanted to play, so we got thrown off the court right in the middle of the set. And that's fine. But in any event, Alito was supposed to go to one of these things, and because of the blowback, he canceled. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, he's going to have a very, very unpleasant life for a while. I mean, this kind of thing, when he shows up at a restaurant or whatever, you know, there are going to be people who are very unhappy about that and can be vocal about it. They shouldn't do anything. That would be wrong. But I'll tell you what, this is a very invasive. It's invasive of the privacy of people in the country. People take things for granted. They take Brown versus Board of Education for granted. They take their personal liberty for granted. And this is going to have an impact. We're going to go to Ukraine. And this is unbelievable. The Russians are now storming the Mariupol steel plant. Remember, that's the holdout. A couple of thousand Ukrainian troops and civilians hold up in there. They've been up in there for a long time. Putin had said, we're not going to storm it. We're going to keep bombing it. Well, now, using airstrikes, they're sending people in. And it just came out just this morning that they have breached the perimeter of the steel plant. They're going to go down and genocide everybody down there. They are Nazis. They are Nazis. You know, I don't use that term lightly. You know, you have the humorously, and I think wrongly, people on TV, the soup Nazi, the chocolate Nazi, that kind of thing. You have teenagers who are grounded by their parents, going, oh, my parents are such Nazis, they're such fascists, they grounded me. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the extermination of people on racial or religious grounds because they're different from you, to establish the superiority of your race or culture. That's what Russia is doing, and we're standing by, and I can't stand that. Quite frankly, I think Biden has responded magnificently in one way. He has gotten economic sanctions up the wazoo that's strangling Russia's economy, but that takes a year or two or longer to have effect. He's also sent more heavy weapons, so has Europe. But, you know, the Polish border or the Romanian border to Mariupol isn't that far. What is it, a couple hundred miles? And we're standing there watching a country whose only sin was to try to apply to NATO, subject to genocide. I tell you what, I'm going to say it again. And I said, Joe, send in the planes. Well, now they're apparently sending in some planes. Early on, I would simply have said, we're going to have a no-fly zone over Ukraine, and we are going to enforce it now. And even now, I'd say, we're going to have a humanitarian corridor, and everybody in Mariupol, including the fighters, are going to be extracted. And Putin, don't even presume, Putin, to attack us for doing that. Don't even think about it, you little worm, genocidal sadist, incompetent military, and then you just send in jets to escort these caravans that go in to extract people. And the minute there is any hostile fire, those Russian ships in the Black Sea are the bottom of the Black Sea. They're an absolutely incompetent navy. The Ukrainians have sunk several of them, including their flagship, from shore. From shore, either the drones or mines or stingers. From shore. We can't stand by and watch a genocide and say, well, okay, if it had been a few miles west, we would have stopped it. These people are look, Ukraine used to be part of Poland. In 1795, it was part of Poland. Russia, Prussia, and Austria divided up. Russia has its nose in their business, in Poland's business, all of Eastern Europe since the 18th century. Continuously attacked it. Poland was off the map for all the 19th century. Got reinstated after the First World War in 1917. Briefly free. I'm talking about Poland now. The Nazis went in, and Stalin, in the devil's pact with Hitler, Russia aligned themselves with the Nazis. Now they're claiming they're fighting Nazis. They are Nazis. We should be much clearer about that in our messaging. Now they say they want Ukraine, quote, back, end quote. What do you mean back? You stole Poland back in 1795, and you've been trying to steal it ever since, and all of its territory, which included Ukraine, and you want it, quote, back, end quote? Because you want to what? Spread, quote, Russian culture, end quote, the culture of sadism, genocide, theft, torture, invasion of privacy, police state, that's your culture. You look back on your glory days in the 19th century. You look back on Dostoevsky and Pushkin, Tolstoy, Tchaikovsky, some great mathematicians and others. The problem was those kinds of people in the 20th century were sent to the gulag and murdered by Stalin. Your culture is the culture of sadism, fraud, and genocide. Not only don't you have a, quote, right, end quote, to extend that, quote, culture, end quote, it's a culture of evil, and we have to stand up to it. But right now, they're storming the Mariupol steel plant as we speak. And they will genocide everybody in there. And the ones they don't, they will kidnap. They will take into Russia. They've already taken 1 million Ukrainians. They sort them out. Anybody who looks like a leader, a military officer, any kind of politician, a priest, a nun, anybody who isn't their kind, journalist, anybody who's well-regarded, and they'll kill them, torture them and kill them. Then the rest, they will simply keep in Russia in camps. And they say they've taken 2,000 children. They've admitted that. Ukraine said they're lying. They've taken a lot more. They flat out kidnap them. And you kidnap a 10-year-old kid and you brainwash them. That's what they're doing. That's what the Ottoman Empire did in the 16th century. They would break in. They invaded Bulgaria and Serbia and the Balkans, kidnap 10-year-olds. That's what, fifth grade roughly? Fourth grade, 10-year-old? Forcibly convert them, call them Janissaries, send them back to murder their relatives. That's what they did. That's what Russia's doing. This is a form of Russian jihad. That's why they've involved the Chechens in this torture and murder. They're an evil country, and evil. The people are not evil. Their culture is evil. We should not permit the genocide. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going to the lines. Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. Joe, what's on your mind today?
I'd be interested in your thoughts, Matt. Perhaps you've covered this subject before, but it's about the difference between freezing assets and actually selling assets, for example, of Russian oligarchs in an effort to provide some pressure points on this in this Ukrainian battle. And I was looking at an article in an online site called The Conversation, and they were citing two things that we might lose if Biden goes ahead with his efforts to instead of just freezing assets, which we under current law we can do, but instead going into selling these assets. And he's apparently going to Congress to avoid any legal trouble, which is one of the problems they had said, that we currently do not have within our laws. We aren't able to actually sell confiscated assets in this way, but also the kind of the diplomatic edge that you may lose by not having these assets as something that you can use as a bargaining chip farther down the line. So I'd be really curious to hear what your thoughts are about those two aspects of it in this situation.
Yeah, thanks. That's an excellent question. And I'm going to give you the legal background and the policy background. The objections that some people have to it, pardon me, under the Fifth Amendment, you can't take property without due process, which is usually a condemnation proceeding. For instance, if you own a house and it's right in the middle of a planned freeway and they have all the other land and you won't give yours up, they can condemn your house, give you fair market value and take it. But that's due process. And, you know, you get to contest it in court. What Biden is doing, I think, is very smart. I support it. And here's why. Not only don't I think it will have a bad effect, but it's going to have a very good effect. These oligarchs, and this has been, I think, fairly well established, under Putin have stolen something like 80% of the wealth of Russia. By that, I mean they have a very, very large trade surplus because they have plenty of gas and oil, and they sell it. And Putin and the rest of them have stolen well over $1 trillion. And they do it by, for instance, falsifying invoices. You know, the Defense Department will order 100 tanks and they're going to pay, $300 million or whatever, rubles. And they cook it up and then they only get delivery of maybe 30 tanks. And then, but it says all of them. And then the money gets paid and it goes into Putin's bank account and the others. So this is fraudulently obtained money. And it's ultimately, obviously, the property of the Russian people, but the Russian people are committing genocide in Ukraine. And you can say, well, that's Putin. And yes, it's Putin, but he's acting in the name of the Russian people. And these soldiers are torturing people. And these are average soldiers, many of them. So what Biden says is there's tremendous needs in Ukraine because look at their cities. They bombed them. Mariupol is like Aleppo or Grozny. I mean, Mariupol basically doesn't exist anymore. It's people in a basement in a steel plant. And it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars to rebuild it. And why should the United States be the only one, or Western Europe, to do it? So we're going to have the oligarchs do it. So in any event, he's freezing this money. My own view, he hasn't said this yet, we have 350 billion with a B of Russian assets, government assets in Frankfurt, London, and New York. I would confiscate that too and use it to rebuild Ukraine. So then if you are a liberal in the Western tradition, you'd say, but Matt, what about due process? Shouldn't you get a judge's permission to do it? And our judicial system right now is so clogged. Trump has exploited it, and all of his people, that constant appeals, they blow up subpoenas, they lie, they destroy documents, they engineer a coup, and nothing's happened to them. The only thing that's happened to people are the idiots who actually went in and struck police officers, but the people behind the scenes, nothing's happened to them. So I think what Biden is doing, and I'd do the same thing, I'd say, you know, there are different kinds of due process, as long as it's due process, can be manifested in different ways. One of them is, say, an act of Congress. And if the act of Congress is, okay, confiscate it, and I think it would get through, then you go ahead and confiscate it. Then what happens is the burden is on the oligarch, not on us to start a condemnation proceeding, but on the oligarch, you know, Joe Shmuelievitz, wherever the heck he's hiding out. And he has to come into court in the United States and say, this is wrong. He can do that, but we should require that he come here personally, that he not just hire lawyers and give virtual depositions from a hiding place. The minute he comes in here, I would arrest him. I would arrest him. And what I would do is charge him with collusion, theft of his nation's assets, which we do all the time. And we have jurisdiction to do that in this country. Frequently, this money comes through American banks. And then I'd put him in prison. And then if I were the judge, I would say, well, was there due process here? Yes, there was due process. A thief is not entitled to the return of the stolen goods. I mean, that's very clear law. So unless he can prove the burden's on him that he's not a thief and that he got $80 billion just because he's a very smart businessman when he hasn't done jack. You see what I mean? So in other words, it would put the judicial burden to start it on the oligarch, and we would require he come into the country. He cannot do it with surrogates and arrest him, so he won't do it, and we will get that money. Now, you could argue, some people would say, well, shouldn't that go to the Russian people? Well, if the Russian people hadn't been complicit, and not all of them were, Navalny is not, and all these terrific protesters are not, but the Russian people in general, the polls show 80% approval of Putin's war. And even though you can say part of that is fear, you know, look, if you and I are in Moscow, pollster calls up, do you support Putin's war? You kidding me? If you say no, you're liable to get arrested. So I think part of that's cooked, but not all of it's cooked. And I think that the word has to go out, the same in Nazi Germany. If you are complicit in this in any way, you're going to pay a price, and not with your lives, but why should the people of Ukraine have their cities destroyed, people murdered, their kids kidnapped? There's got to be a remedy. So I think this is a real good way to do it, Joe. And then the other one was diplomatic and policy, and that's an interesting point. Couldn't we freeze it and then hold it in abeyance and basically give it back to the thieves once what? You know, there were negotiations. I don't think you can negotiate with Hitler. I don't think you can negotiate with ISIS. I don't think you can negotiate with the Russian mafia or the Mexican drug cartels or jihad. You cannot negotiate with fanatics, people who are evil to their core, because they'll lie. Look at Iran. They are lying throughout these negotiations on their bomb, and they are going to get a nuclear weapon if something isn't done. And then they'll be like North Korea, threatening people, threatening Israel, threatening our troops throughout the Middle East, threatening our allies, and threatening Europe. You can't negotiate with them, in my view. That's not to say there aren't good Iranians, good Russians, good people in Mexico, good people throughout the Middle East, good people everywhere. There are, but they're abused. And so that's what I would say. This to me is a no-brainer. It's not just the yachts and the mansions. These people have actual cash squirreled away. And one of the things that kills me about this, Putin has a mistress who is a woman. She's 39 years old. She's a gymnast. And she's a contortionist. Not that this is relevant at all, but he circulates a picture where it's the most chilling picture I've ever seen. You see her smiling, her face between two ankles. And you think, oh, my God. Well, it turns out they're her ankles. I mean, she has rubber bones practically. And she curls her legs around her head. And this is his mistress. I think he's had a child with her. She hasn't been sanctioned yet. And he's funneling money through her. Why is that permitted? Why don't we sanction her? We've sanctioned his family. We sanctioned his daughters. The fear was, well, if you sanctioned his mistress, he may get mad. Well, he's mad right now. In fact, he's crazy right now. So this is just an example. I would hunt down every dollar these people have, every dollar, confiscate it, and use it to rebuild Ukraine and to repay us and the UK and other countries that have provided a lot of military support. And if people say lack of due process, fine. The only people that have standing to say that are the people from whom the money was taken. You know, not me or you or anybody. So they can go to a U.S. court. Absolutely. And they can start an action for restoration of their property because it was taken without due process. But they'd have to come here. And I would arrest these people. And if they do come here and are not arrested and I'm a judge, I say, okay, where did you get the money? Oh, I sold baseball caps. Oh, you did? What, for $80 billion? And I think the proof will be they stole it from the Russian people. And a thief is not entitled, this is black letter law, to the return of money he stole. And then he can say, well, it should go to the Russian people. And if I were a judge, I'd say, you have no standing to say what should go to the Russian people. You stole it from the Russian people. And our government has decided it's going to go as a remedy to rebuild a country that was subject to genocide and sadism. Anyway, Joe, that's the way I look at it. But there's some very respected people of all sides will say, well, we should do it like a condemnation proceeding, like their house is in the path of a freeway and all this stuff. I get it, but I think I just laid out my thoughts, and excellent question. Thanks for calling in, as always. This is unbelievable. Gableman, a second judge just ordered the Wisconsin Republican Party not to delete records that are connected to Gableman. Judge Bailey Wren is the second judge over in Madison. She said, quote, I'm frankly amazed that I have to say, don't destroy records that are subject to an open records request, end quote. This is Judge Bailey Wren, whom I know. 2 weeks before, Judge Frank Remington over there ordered them not to destroy records. And here's the game they're playing. They're saying, well, Gableman is the defendant in Remington's case, and Voss is the defendant in Bailey Wren's. So Bailey Wren can't tell Gableman what to do, and Remington can't tell Voss what to do. You see, you know, and, you know, Bailey Wren cut right through that. And you know what she said? She said, Voss is the principal. Gableman is the agent. The principal is responsible for the actions of the agent. Gableman is shoveling documents into the furnace more than Nixon ever did. And I'm telling Voss, you stop it. And if you don't stop it, you're going to get fined. They've got to do more than fine these people. They have to put them in jail. You can't just blow off open records like that. Enough's enough. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, there's a development in Georgia, our Georgia, the Georgia Atlanta type Georgia, not Georgia over near Russia. There's a race right now for Secretary of State which under Georgia law is responsible for counting the votes. Now remember Stalin's dictum. Joseph Stalin, one of the worst mass murderers in history, killed about 20 million people, murdered them. He once said, it doesn't matter who the people vote for. What matters is who counts the votes. And in all those elections over there, it doesn't matter who they vote for. They issue vote totals showing that the strong man got 90% of the vote. If anybody objects, they kill him. That sentiment is spreading to the United States through the Republican Party. Remember in Georgia, they have a Secretary of State named Brad Raffensperger, who's a Republican. He's very conservative. But he's a straight shooter. And because of COVID during the election last time, 2020, he mailed absentee ballot applications to all registered voters in Georgia and set up drop boxes. And a lot of people were very grateful for that because they didn't want to risk getting COVID in the line. Well, the single moms, people who worked second or third shift and it wasn't going to be possible for them to get to vote, blah, blah, blah. Joe Biden won by a little over 11,000 votes. And we picked up two Senate seats in Georgia. Trump said, well, that's fraud. And people ask him, well, what's fraudulent about it? Well, he encouraged people to absentee vote. Yeah, really? Yeah, right. So what? That's not fraud. They fill out an application and it's a defective one. They don't get a ballot. And the drop boxes, yeah. They were guarded with cameras frequently near police stations or in municipal buildings, and very convenient. You don't have to go into an office and wait in line. You just drop them off in any event. And there wasn't a single ballot that was found to be fraudulent because of either of those circumstances. But he kept saying fraud, 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 fraud. He recruited a congressman named Jody Tice, a guy. His name is Jody Tice, but he's a guy. He gave up his congressional seat, and he's running for Secretary of State in Georgia with Trump's support. Jody Tice was at a meeting in the White House in December of 2020, conspiring for the coup to block the certification of the electors. He's a member of Congress, Republican. He was there with Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan. That's where he was. They were talking with Trump personally. How can we overturn the election? And he's running for Secretary of State against Brad Raffensperger. Brad Raffensperger was the guy that Trump called and extorted, threatened him, said, you got to come up with, I think, 11,571 votes, enough for me to win by one. And remember, if you don't, there can be criminal consequences. That is a felony. That's extortion. If I call somebody up and say, you know, pay me this money, or do this, whatever it is, and if you don't, I will do X. Have you prosecuted, cause violence, felony? And the DA down there in Atlanta has convened a grand jury, and they are looking at Trump right now for that. So you have Jody Tice, who was conspiring with a felon and conspiring to overturn the election, which is treason, sedition, running against Brad Raffensperger in a Republican primary where Raffensperger is a conservative Republican. And the only difference is that Trump supports Tice and Brad Raffensperger is opposed to overturning the election. And it's a toss up. It's a toss up. Now you can say, okay, but there's a Democrat on the ballot in November, and if somehow Tice is the nominee, the Democrat can beat Tice, can't they? Are you kidding me? In this environment right now with Trump in Georgia, if Tice beats Raffensperger, he would be a favorite to win in November, and he conspired to change the vote. He conspired to change the vote, which is a felony. There are about 20 of these people running around the country, including in Michigan, who, if they get elected, Republicans, some of them are the nominees, if they get elected, they will change the vote. You must understand that. They will alter the vote. In 2024, they will say, well, the Democrat won, but there was fraud, so we ordered the electors to be awarded to the Republican. Then that is going to be reviewed by a Republican Supreme Court that just decided to overturn Roe v. Wade out of the blue. You must understand that the Stalin idea, back then it was a communist idea, now it is a Russian mafia idea. It's always been a Nazi idea. It's always been an authoritarian idea, that it does not matter who the people vote for. What matters is who counts the votes. And Jody Tice is just the tip of the iceberg. About 20 of these people nationwide are running, and some are going to win. Just statistically, some will win. The attorney general nominee and the secretary of state nominees for the Republican Party in Michigan were not picked in a primary. They were picked by Trump delegates. And both of them are like Jody Tice. This is Michigan we're talking about. Michigan. Hillary Clinton only lost Michigan 2016 by 10,000 votes. It's a much bigger state than Wisconsin, electorally. Biden beat Trump by more than 100,000 votes. And these people who are running as Republicans said they would have given the electors to Trump anyway. That is what Lukashenko in Belarus did. That is what Putin in Russia does. In North Korea and China, they don't even bother to have elections. That's what they do in Venezuela. This is the United States. This is the Republican Party. This is the Republican Party. The question is, if the Republican Party has gone Stalin, if it has embraced, quote, it doesn't matter who the people vote for, what matters is who counts the votes. The only alternative, the only savior, would be the Democratic candidate. And in this environment right now, there are a lot of people out there who vote against the party that is the White House. So when the Republicans have the White House, they vote for Democrats for statewide office and for Congress and so forth. And when there's a Democrat in the White House, they go for the Republicans. That has been standard operating procedure for most races, except in 1998 and 2004. In 1998, Bill Clinton was president. Even though he was president, he picked up congressional seats. And then in 2004, George W. Bush picked up 2,000 seats, even though he was congressional seats, even though he was president. But that's rare. So be aware of this. And here in Wisconsin, you have Doug La Follette running again, Secretary of State. He's a good guy. He's been a Secretary of State a long time. He has a challenger. I don't know the challenger at all, a Democrat in the primary, but do not vote for a Republican. They will turn the electoral votes over to the Republicans. And Doug La Follette has stood tall all this time. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.